are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Yeah. Good. So anyway, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
To the Serious Growth Podcast. The goal here usually is to just, you know, tell it like it is, even if it hurts people's feelings. We just say it like it is. I'm really impressed by your bio, by the way. But I wanted to talk about, first of all, it says here that you've earned America's most trusted fitness professional. Why don't you go ahead and elaborate on that for us?
You know, it's funny because I can't remember how many years ago it was, but when my 25-year-old son was much younger, he said, "Daddy, are you really America's most trusted fitness professional?" And I said, "Absolutely." And he asked the question that every kid would ask, "Why?"
Yeah.
And it's a great question. And I said, "Because I said so." You know, and it's because I know what I do for people. I know how I approach my business, my profession, my style, if you will, in helping people become the best version of themselves possible. So you have to make a very bold statement for people to believe you. So that's really how it came to be.
And on top of that, because I'm sure you do, not only do you have to say it, but you have to back it up. And, you know, I had a guy that was an ad writer for me many years ago. And he said, "Leo, do you know why I'm the best damn ad writer in the world?" I said, "Why, Gary?" He says, "Because I tell people that I am." But then he went on to say, "But I have to produce the results." And you just don't say that, because then it falls, you know, people, you start exposing yourself at that point. But I like that statement, because you know what? That, you know, you have to keep if you're really living that, you know, that lifestyle, you really have to be accountable to yourself. As well as the people that you're dealing with. Now, you are a professional fitness model.
Well, you know, is that a thing?
You know,
professional fitness model.
Are you making a living in it?
Well, it's something that I've done. I've made a living off of my body and got paid for it. So that makes you a professional.
Yeah.
And people would put me in the category of fitness model. And this was before fitness modeling existed.
Right.
It wasn't a thing. Back then, like, you know, we had bodybuilders off season and bodybuilders on season.
Yeah.
That was all that existed in the world. And then one day I was at a photo shoot and I was listening to a photographer talk to a bodybuilder who was in shape, getting ready to get out of shape. And he said, "I'll call you the next time I'm in shape." And instantly in my mind, I thought, what if I'm always in shape? How many opportunities will I get if I'm the guy that's always ready in the event a magazine needs someone, in the event someone needs to be shot for an ad campaign or whatever? And that's how I really started my career. And a lot of people will credit me with the beginning of like a real fitness model.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And I see that you were a Marine. So did this all happen to you, I assume, after being in the military? How did you get into all this? What was that sort of that chronological order, if you will?
Yeah, so I was a Marine. I got out in 1984, and I started working in the gym business as an instructor. And then from instructor, I went into sales. And then in sales, I went into management. And while I was in management, I had somebody approach me and said, "Hey, you should be a bodybuilder. You have a really good physique." This was around 1987. And at the time, you remember James DeMello. Actually, you look a little bit like James DeMello.
I do remember him.
Yeah. So James DeMello was on the cover of Muscle and Fitness with Corey Everson. And I'll never forget it. And, you know, you talk about keeping this real. I'm keeping it real right now. I was rolling a joint on top of the Muscle and Fitness. And it had James DeMello on there. And it said, "World's Most Handsome Bodybuilder." And I looked at him and I thought, I'm better looking than this dude. Come on. So that's what got my mind set on really being in the magazine. So I started seeking out different photographers. And I ended up finding one. And it just started happening for me.
So were you in Ohio at this time, or were you already living in San Diego?
I was in San Diego. I used the Marine Corps to get out of Ohio, and I came out here I joined the Marine Corps in 1981. I got out in 84, and then after that, that's when I got in the gym business and all that sort of thing. So I was in Oceanside, California.
And so you've been there ever since. But so how easy was it to get into all these? I see you've been in 130 fitness publications. And how is it exactly that you were, I mean, there's a lot of competition for people wanting to get into the magazines. I know that because back in my day, I was, you know, that person as well. But, you know, 130 of them. How in the world did you manage all that? What was your tactic? And I mean, it's one thing to be in shape, but is it a certain kind of shape that you had to be in that you started learning about? How did that work for you? Because that's remarkable that you've been in that many publications.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief and the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Well, actually, on the cover of that many. So that's even more distinguished, I think, because that's really the ultimate goal of everybody that gets in this industry is to be on the cover or in the pages of a magazine. So like I said earlier, the number one thing that I focused in on was always being in shape, because I realized at the time there were bodybuilders who were either bulking up or ready for a show. And as you know, Leo, that they're ready for a show and they're only ready for a short window of time.
Right.
So the photographers, the magazines, everybody needed to shoot those guys for an entire year of publications in 1 week or 2 weeks. So it became hard to find people who were always ready, because the truth is different opportunities come up. And if someone is not readily available at that time, then maybe the magazine misses out on an advertising possibility or whatever. So I was smart enough to see into that and kind of behind the curtain of how the magazines operated and what the need was. So any salesperson is going to find the need, fill the need, and then close the deal. So I found a need. Somebody needed to be in shape all the time. So I didn't care about getting bigger and bulking up and coming in the next show better. And I filled that need by letting every photographer that I was aware of or I found out about that, my name is Clark Bartram. I'm always in shape. If you need me, I'm ready to go. So then one day, I got a call from Muscle and Fitness Magazine. Jim Chatta was the art director at the time, and he called me up. I got a, I had a pager, and my pager had a 818 area code. And I thought, well, man, I never get pages from this area code. And I called the number back, and Muscle and Fitness, can we help you? And I'm like, oh, my God, Muscle and Fitness. Yeah. So they said, yeah, Clark Bartram, Jim Chatta just called you. I'm like, Jim Chatta? Oh, no way. So he picks up the phone and his exact words were, okay, Mr. Always in Shape, we need you tomorrow for a photo shoot in Chatsworth, or no, in Fullerton at the World Gym. I need you to be there. I showed up. Photographer was there. He said, dude, Jim Chatta's here. He never shows up to photo shoots. We walked in the gym. He said, take your shirt off. I pulled my shirt up in the middle of the gym. He's like, good deal. That turned into an 8-page layout in Muscle and Fitness.
Wow.
Because I was always in shape. So the long and short of it is this. Out of 100-something magazine covers that I've been on, I've literally been called specifically about 5 times. The other 100-something have been because Michael Hearn wasn't ready or available. Christian Boving, Frank Seppi, you know, the guys that were the guys back then.
Yeah.
There was maybe 5 or 6 of us.
Yeah.
Maybe they weren't ready. Maybe they needed a couple weeks to get ripped. I said, I'm always going to stay that way. And I've lived up to that till this day. I could shoot a magazine cover tomorrow.
I'll be darned. That's impressive, because I'm that guy that was ready, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. You know, that's just the way. And that's, like you said, a lot of people back then did it that way. So that was interesting that you found that niche. But when you were reaching out, I'm assuming that you sent down a bunch of photos and some shots that you had done. So these guys got a look at you to begin with?
So what I did was I focused in on one guy specifically that I knew had a chance to get in front of. So I had a sheepskin seat cover store in Encinitas, California. And in Encinitas, there was a photographer who worked for Muscle Fitness back in the day called Ralph DeHaan. Maybe you remember him.
I think I do. So I think Ralph, I remember the name.
Yeah, Ralph was under contract with Muscle and Fitness. So I I met him at a bodybuilding show because he did all of the photography backstage at NPC events. And I met him there. So I thought, I'm going to get in front of this guy and let him know I'm always in shape. So one day he was at a surf shop in there minding his own business. And I saw him walk in. I'm like, there he is. So I ran over to him. I remember I tapped him on the shoulder. He turned around. I stuck my hand out to shake his hand. I said, my name is Clark Bartram. I'm always in shape. If you ever need me for a photo shoot, I'm your guy. And he was kind of taken aback. He's like, whoa, I just got freaking accosted by this guy telling me he's always, you know, I'm showing my abs. Yeah. And I'm like, look, I'm ready all the time. So 1 month later, I called him. I don't have anything for you, Clark. Another 30 days, I called him again. He said, man, I think I have something for you. Meet me at my studio. So I went to his studio and we ended up shooting. It was a Larry Scott exercise. It was a leaning shoulder press on the dumbbells where you were at an angle. And the photograph was probably 3 inches by 3 inches. And it ended up in Muscle and Fitness. And that was my first opportunity from that very bold statement I made that I'm always going to be in shape.
Yeah.
So that's the thing in business. And specifically this industry, there are so many people who are ready and looking good. Now we see them everywhere, right? Because of social media. Yeah. But back then, it was a log jam. You had to get through the guard that stood in front of the magazines. And I figured out how to do that.
Yeah, that's smart. And the thing about it is, look, again, you were always in shape and you weren't afraid to be aggressive enough and bold enough to go up to somebody and say, hey, you know, I'm that guy. And a lot of people that will just hold them back. They never get to that point. So what have you always been? Cause you sound like you're very assertive in a good way. Have you always been that way? Is that something that is learned maybe from the military? Because I can tell right now you're a go-getter, you're aggressive. You don't mess around. I can see that already, but is that something that's natural to you? Is it already in your family somewhere?
You know, that's a really good question. And the honest answer is, I don't think so. I was a really shy kid. I can remember growing up and being so shy that if I came to your house and you asked me if I was hungry and I wanted to eat, I would be starving and be embarrassed or shy or afraid or, I don't know, pride or ego or something got in the way of me saying, yeah, I'm hungry. I want something to eat.
Yeah.
Because that was actually the case when I was a kid. You know, we grew up very poor. There was a lot of dysfunction, as most everyone has in their life. And it really caused me to kind of be introverted. And that, I believe, is why I joined the Marine Corps. And to answer your question specifically, I do believe it was the Marine Corps that brought it out in me, because I rose to the top in my platoon. And I was a guy that stood out because I really felt like I needed to make a mark. My cousin and I went in together on the buddy plan, and he kind of went one direction and I went the other. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to be the baddest MF-er in here and just really go after it. And that's exactly what I did. And from that place, it gave me the confidence to know that if I just tried and didn't back down because of some invisible fear that, you know, made me back away, that, you know, the worst thing that could happen was, well, maybe I come in second place. You know, and that happened to me a lot. So,
yeah, that's interesting, because I find – you know, you and I have something a little bit in common, because I'm very shy myself. I could never, in fact, when I was going through school, high school or college, I dropped any class that had an oral presentation. I was that intimidated by getting up in front of people, you know? And then here I am, fast forward, you know, I grew up as my parents and grandparents were in the dairy business. Portuguese culture is a lot in the dairy industry. And it's kind of next, you're the next one that it's left to. So I always just thought that that was going to happen for me. And it didn't, because it wasn't in my blood. But at the same time, now I'm faced with, okay, so if I want to become a personal trainer, which I did, part of the thing that I have to do is promote myself. Well, it's just not going to happen. You know, you don't hang a shingle out and all of a sudden you've got clients coming at your ears. And so I had to get out there and actually promote who I was. And I tell you something, Clark, I was frightened beyond belief. And here's what I didn't know about myself, and it sounds like this is something that happened to you. I didn't know how good of a speaker I was. I just let fear paralyze it to the point. I just said, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, but when we're up against the wall, it's amazing what we can do. And I was so surprised. And what that did for me was it turned my whole life around, because I thought, well, listen, if that was a surprise, what else is a surprise out there that I may be afraid of doing? And it changed my life forever. And it sounds like, you know, you had sort of that same experience in a way.
Exactly. I can remember one day we were at a Bible study. It's when my wife and I were going through, it was called Marriage Encounter. It was a pre-marriage Catholic counseling before you went in. And we were going to this Bible study. And at the end of the Bible study, we had to go around in a circle and pray. And I remember they started with the person to my right, and we were going around the long way. And as each person got closer to me, I felt the fear rising up more and more, the sweat, the trembling. And by the time it came to me to pray, I literally couldn't speak. I could not form a word. And then you fast forward 25 years later, however long ago it was, I had a TV show called American Health and Fitness, and my in-laws came out. They were in that little prayer group together with us. And I can remember out of the corner of my eye seeing my mother-in-law stand off to the side as I was in front of the TV camera, just doing my thing, bah, 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 you know, just killing it. And I could see the look on her eyes like, oh my God, who is this person?
This Clark?
And I went over to her afterwards and she said, how did you do that? And I said, well, you know what? I just stepped into it. I know that I'm good at this. I know I have a gift. And back then I have never exercised that gift before.
Yeah.
And now, just like our muscles, I choose to exercise that gift as often as I possibly can. Like, this is another great example. This is only making me better at what I do. Yeah. It's only making you better at what you do. And yeah, this makes us sought after, appreciated, respected, heard, in all of the things that we want to be. Influencers.
Yeah.
It's a really neat thing. And I would encourage anyone that's listening to not allow fear to step in the way of you and your desired goals in life, because that's really the only thing that holds anyone back from accomplishing whatever it is they say they want to do.
Yeah, that's true. And I tell you, a lot of times, at least what happened to me is the case, you just got to jump in, you know. And I had an interview with somebody else that was in military, Tom Uzzella. I don't know if you've heard of him, but his philosophy was just, you got to be, just go all in and just jump in and rip the tape, you know, the Band-Aid off. And that's exactly what happened with me. And God, it's just so amazing. And then you just, now I look forward to that. And I have to be honest with you, when I'm still doing like a big event, or if I'm talking in front of people, I still get the butterflies, but I like those butterflies because that reminds me, as an athlete, I used to get those butterflies, but I knew I was ready when I had butterflies, you know? So it's not the kind of butterflies that stops me. It's the kind that tells me I'm ready, you know, let's go.
And it lets you know you're human too. And it also lets you know that you need to remind yourself that it's never about you.
Yeah.
And that's where the real butterflies come in, because we put the spotlight on ourselves. Like, what are people going to think of me? How do I look? Is my hair right? Or do I blah, blah, all this BS, man. And the butterflies to me, which I still get as well, are simply a reminder for me to tap into, you know, for me, God in my life, because I am simply an instrument. I am not capable of what I do. I open my vessel up and I allow whatever it is that I'm tapping into to flow through me. That's how I see what I do.
Yeah.
I never think it's me. I'm not smart enough. I'm not witty enough. I'm none of those things. But if I open myself up to God in the outpouring to come through me, I'm simply a mouthpiece. And it has nothing to do with me at that point. Of course you want to look good and be dressed properly like you. You know, but that's where the issue comes in, is when we start to believe it's about us, because it really never is.
Yeah, interesting. It's an interesting way that you look at that. I like that. When you got into training, were you already training when you went into the Marines, or did that all start again? I know that the Marines kind of jump started you in many ways. Did it jumpstart your training that you started getting into?
It certainly catapulted it to another level. Alex Ardente, you know who he is?
No.
So Alex Ardente is a big time photographer, and he was a bodybuilder, and he just completed a documentary called Access Muscle, and it's about the industry. You need to watch it. It's not out yet. But when it comes out, you really need to see it, because it gives a great look on the industry. But he interviewed me, and he said, what was the first piece of equipment you trained on? And probably much like you, it was a universal. It was the Chrome Universal with the bench press and the shoulder press and the leg press.
Yeah.
It was in our high school basement, basically, is where it was. And the wrestling coach, Coach Stefanovic, the little guy, we went down there and we were working out, and we got, you know, everyone get their little pump. And he, I remember he looked at us and said, "Oh, you're all pumped up right now. By the time you get to history class, that's going to be gone. So don't think you're some big tough guy." And I was like, well, you encourage somebody.
Yeah, break me down.
That was the first time I really exercised. But then I went to the Marine Corps and I started playing rugby. And after rugby practice, there was a guy named Gonzo. He was from East LA, buff guy. And there was a mirror there that we walk into the squad bay and look into the mirror, and it said something, "Are you a perfect Marine?" or something like that above it. And we were in there posing. I was a little skinny, ripped guy, about 165 pounds. He was probably 200. And he looked at me and he said, "Man, you should be a bodybuilder. You got a great physique." And I'm like, "Eh, I don't want to look like you. Yeah, girls don't like that. You're all big and bulky and ugly. You know, get out of here."
Yeah.
Fast forward to 88. A buddy of mine said, "Hey, you got the physique. You should do a show." And that's when it really ramped up, was probably in 88 is when I got serious and started lifting. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I pulled out an old VHS the other day to send to Alex for that documentary of me in the gym in 1988, bench pressing with a bunch of buddies, Nautilus equipment in the back. Yeah. It was classic.
Nice. Gonzo, is he a Samoan?
Mexican guy.
Oh, Mexican guy. Okay.
Gonzalez.
Okay. Oh, Gonzalez. Yeah, that's what you said there. Yeah. Okay. So how did you know, like, when you started training, how did you know how to start working out and training and all that kind of stuff? And when did you start honing in on exactly how you needed to train for the sport that you were in?
So because I was in the gym business, I was surrounded by people who knew what they were doing. There were guys coming in constantly to the gym who, I was thinking about it yesterday. It's really funny. I'm that guy now at 56 years old who these young guys are looking at like, "Damn, look at this old dude."
Yeah.
I can remember at 26 looking at this 50-year-old guy in the gym like, "Damn, how can you look like that at 50, bro?"
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. I'm that guy now, and it's pretty funny. So I was fortunate to be surrounded by guys like that who just gave me bits and pieces of information. And James DeMello was a big inspiration of mine. He and I traveled around the country together. So I learned a lot from a lot of people who were in the throes of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And a buddy of mine who had just won the Mr. California was the one that came to me in the gym. He calls me CB. "CB, you need to get in a show. Let me train you for the show." So I trained for about 4 weeks and ended up entering the 1988 NPC Muscle Mania.
Okay.
And ended up going in the open division instead of the novice, and ended up winning the middleweight in overall. And Luz Wicks on me, and that really kind of is what honed me in, like, okay, maybe I got something. Maybe this is something that I can do.
Yeah.
And that's when I really started focusing in on shows and learning how to train and diet and do some really crazy stuff like we did back in the 80s, right? We did stupid things back then, man.
Yeah.
Were that you had me take a bath in orange juice after between the morning
up.
Show and the night show. Yeah, I was in the bathtub taking a bath in orange juice, man.
I know, we do crazy stuff like that. You just to take it just a little, I want to get a little bit better. Just a little bit better. A lot of times for me, I know, and I learned this lesson from, I'm sure you know Tom Platz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he was the one that told me one time, because I have that tendency of like always wanting to tweak it. I just want to be a little bit better. And oftentimes I came in worse because I did that. And he told me, you got to think of it like, his metaphor was, think of it like an airplane coming into land smoothly instead of crash landing into the show. Cause that's kind of what I was doing. You know, this is when Tom and I got together, and I learned a lot from him, from his experiences. But, okay. So then when you're training, you're at that point now, what division were you competing in? I'm assuming they didn't have all the categories that they had now. That was still bodybuilding, basically bodybuilding. Okay. So when did you, decide to, make that transition to a fitness model, if I'm saying this right? And did it change your training and how?
So I fluctuated between middleweight and light heavyweight. And then the Muscle Mania turned into a big show. Luz Wick, let me give you a little backstory here that a lot of people don't know about. When I won that show, the NPC Muscle Mania in 1988, people made fun of me because of the name. back then it was the North County and the Mr. California and all of these just very time-honored shows. Like the Mr. North County here in my area was the show to win. But suddenly this NPC show came out of the blue, the Musclemania, and I won it. And Lou Zwick said, hey, let me see your pictures. And he had American, some show on ESPN back there. And then suddenly he came out with the Musclemania, which was a non-sanctioned show. So I started competing in that. And that was on ESPN. And I did that as a light heavyweight and a heavyweight. And that was my last show, was in 1997 as a light heavyweight in the Musclemania. And I got second behind a guy by the name of Adi Ray, who is an Indonesian Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's a huge star in Indonesia, one of the nicest people on the planet, but an absolute freak of nature. I looked at him in the hotel lobby, media surrounding him. He dropped his pants down, showed his legs. I'm like, I don't even need to be here. This is not even, there's no way I can compete against that guy. And that was the day that I decided, you know what? I'm done bodybuilding because I'm not willing to take it to the next level. I don't want to be that guy. I'm going to use my physique and my looks to model. Yeah. I think there's something here. I'm just going to model. And I got a lot of backlash from people that are like, dude, what? Model? What do you mean? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get on the cover of magazines, bro. I'm gonna get paid. I'm gonna get endorsement deals, and I ended up. Matter of fact, my son's inside here, and I remember one day walking down to the mailbox. I said, "Come with me," and we walked down, and I pulled out the mail, and there was a check written to me. And I said, "Mitch, you can do anything you want in your life." He goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "This is a check because I'm me." He's like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "This company is paying me to be Clark Bartram," and I had to explain that whole thing to him. And I've been making a living off of this brand for decades.
Nice.
Decades.
Yeah.
I still am to this day.
Yeah. That's really cool. You know, one of the things that, again, I can relate to you because I'm supposed to be on a dairy, next generation dairy boy. And to go out here and find I never knew that bodybuilding would become a full-time living for me. Or being a personal trainer, because I know that you do certifications with personal trainers. I see with Issa, and boy, I tell you what, Clark, it's what a huge distinction when you find your passion that you live it every single day. Man, there is no comparison to that of a job or something that you do that you just don't like going to. I could never see myself doing anything else because. I can tell with you, I look forward to the next day, every single day. I mean, I'm living my dream and my passion all the time. Who wouldn't? And that doesn't mean that you don't have obstacles and have bad days and all that kind of stuff, but it looks different when you're doing something that you truly, like you said, you're being very authentic to who you are and getting paid for that. Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I applaud you for doing your thing because so many people get stuck in the family business, let's call it, or the expectation or what somebody else wants you to be. And to venture out from that and go into the darkness without support, literally, because people will not support a dream that they're not attached to.
Right.
But you somehow had this vision inside of yourself that said, you know, there's something other than me milking a cow.
Right.
And doing that, you know, and nothing, there's nothing wrong with that. I live in Escondido, California, where it was literally birthed by the Dutch and they're pig farmers.
Yeah.
So this town that I live in is really built off of that style of living. Yeah. And there's a matter of fact, my training partner's out here and he's probably one of the hardest working blue collar guys I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't something that I was connected to.
Right.
And you're right, man. I get up every day. I trained my client this morning. We had so much fun. Then we went to breakfast. Now I'm doing this podcast.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the beach after this. I'm building a new supplement right now. I smell like vitamins because I was in the factory or in the lab yesterday doing that.
Yeah.
Man, and you know, the money's not always there. You know, people think I'm rich, but you know, I am. I'm extremely wealthy, but it doesn't always equal money.
Right. I understand what you're saying.
That's not the deal for me, man. Yeah. I'm okay.
I totally get what you're saying. You know, for me, because you know who Tony Robbins is?
Of course.
Okay. I read in one of his books, he talked about, I read those back in the 80s. He talked about sort of the human condition has a tendency of changing when there's enough pleasure or enough pain. And for me, it was about pain, actually, because what happened with me is I was an athlete. I wanted to be a professional athlete, which my oldest son went on to be. He played Major League Baseball with the Kansas City Royals. He lived that dream that I thought that I wanted to, you know. Well, it didn't work out, and I settled, Clark. And that, you know, I thought, you know, maybe this is just a sign that I shouldn't be, you know, going forward with my career. I had a big injury. And it wasn't an injury that really should have kept me out. It's just I talked myself into that at that point. I was burned out, I guess. There were other reasons, you know. But that haunted me for a while. After I got out of the sport that you know, I really wanted to be in as a professional athlete, and who knows you're going to make that. Nobody knows that. But I didn't realize how much pain that caused me because, in my case, it was I didn't at least try to reach my full potential. And so I ended up on the dairy, and I told myself, you know, once I realized, you know, this is an honorable occupation. There's no question about that, but it's not in my blood. It's just I'm doing it just because I'm supposed to. And when I left and I got into weight training, and I told myself when I was on the dairy, if I ever get a chance again to have that buzz in the belly that sports gave me, I'm not going to question that. I'm just going to jump. And so that day happened to me. And when I made that jump after I did my first bodybuilding show, I didn't care. There was nobody doing personal training, believe it or not, back in 82 in my town. Didn't matter. I was scared as hell. I jumped and I thought, I'll just figure out a way because I'm not going to let myself down twice. And so that, and like you said, you don't get a lot of support with that because you're doing something, first of all, no one's doing it. You're doing something that's just not normal in this case back then, which compared to now, it's amazing how that's all turned. But for me, it was about having enough pain to make that jump and then believing in that, and the rest is history for me. And again, like we talked about at the top of the show, you just don't know sometimes, you know, where you're going to excel and where the surprises are, you know. Like I never knew I was a good speaker until I gave it a try. But I don't know, it sounds like you and I have sort of similar, we've kind of gone down that path a little bit, and then we're living our own dream. And how cool is that? And I'm 65, and I have to tell you, at 65, I'm enjoying it more now than I did. You know, I got into this at 27, and I'm enjoying it more now. And I think it's just because I really realize how special this is. You know, when you keep getting these chances to where you can stay in and doing stuff that you really love, I don't know, man. It's a different kind of feeling for me. I don't know about for you.
Well, you know, you're enjoying it because you're living your life, for one. I mean, look at you, dude. Look at you. I mean, you're an absolute... You're in the one half of 1% of the population still to this day. The way you dress, your hair, your attitude, your energy, your style, your charisma, all of that just screams life. And that is the beauty of this. And that's what's so attractive to people is you're not accepting the norm.
Right.
And, you know, something that you had talked about made me think that, you know, the things that we regret most in life are the things that we didn't do, not the fact that we went off and got drunk and act stupid and got beat up in a bar fight. That's not a regret. The regret is, wow, man, I didn't do this because I was afraid, I was embarrassed, I was whatever.
Awful.
Whatever conversation we had in life to talk us out of it, whatever it is, man, that stuff lives with you forever.
Ate me alive. It ate me alive. That's what I mean. It was so painful. And then I hated being on the dairy. It got worse and worse. It ate me alive. I had to do it. I probably would have died much sooner, I think. Because I think, you know, when you're in that kind of state, that's not good for you. At some point, something's got to give. Not going to be good, you know. Getting back to your training, I'm curious to know now. Now, when you decided that you were going to be a model, you figured out what you thought your niche was, which you did, how did that impact your training compared to when you were training as a lightweight or light heavyweight or a middleweight? How did that all change?
Yeah, I stopped beating myself up. You know, I remember those sessions in the gym where, again, it was James DeMello. I was living in Texas at the time, and he had legs similar to Platt's. Yeah. And he and Platt's used to train together back in the day in the old Gold's Gym days because James managed Gold's Venice.
Okay, yeah.
But I can remember days where we would squat 405 till the first guy puked. And I could see it in my brain right now. I went and I did like 20 something reps with 405 back then, man. Yeah. And I crawled literally crawled on the ground to the trash can and puked. I lost because I puked first.
Yeah.
So that was the way we approached it back then. And I have friends who still do that to this day. Michael Hearn is a perfect example of that. I'm the godfather to his son, Titan. And I looked on Mike's feed today, and he did a leg day yesterday that when I go train with him, and here's the answer, I am not on the same squat rack. I'm probably one or two down because there's a group of guys and there's a hierarchy, right? The ones that can squat with Mike, the ones that can squat with Mike's wife, and the ones that are just kind of hanging around. I am no longer even squatting with Mike's wife. And that's what I changed back in the day. I thought, you know what? I can't beat myself up because I had bad knees as a young guy. And I had the forethought to know that I wanted to do this for a long time. Now, Mike has a whole different approach. He believes in beating yourself up to increase the tendon strength and all that sort of stuff. There's a principle he always quotes. But I took the opposite approach. I lift light. Like, I was just deadlifting heavy just now for me, and that was like 275, you know, for sets. That's all, that's it.
Yeah.
So that's what changed.
Okay, and then now, do you have to decondition yourself a little bit to have the right look? Because I know I trained movie stars back in the day. My most notable was Costner, Kevin Costner. And one of the things he told me was, look, you can't make me look 1 pound bigger, and yet I want you to train me because it changes the aesthetics on camera. Did you have to decondition your body, like maybe make your legs smaller or anything like that to be more in that fitness model category?
Not really, because I think I was almost predestined to do what I do.
Okay.
I don't really think that bodybuilding was my lane. I did it and I did well in it, but I honestly think that the modeling, even though I'm short, I'm only 5'8". So for me, everyone told me you're too short to be a model. Well, print modeling doesn't matter. But my symmetry and my proportion at the time, but I did tone down for sure, because at my biggest, I was 230. 5'8", 230.
Yeah, that's big.
Is pretty big.
Yeah.
So I settled in. I've been 185 forever. Mm-hmm. And that's where I hover around. And that's probably my best condition for modeling. So again, I could literally take my shirt off right now, go in my garage and do a photo shoot and be worthy of a magazine cover. So 185 is right for me. So yeah, I did kind of tone it down a little bit.
Yeah, I would think that you would. I just wanted to ask that question.
Yeah.
Now, to keep yourself at this weight that you've been forever at 185, I assume that you have adjusted to it and it's not something that you like I'm starving all the time or so how do you keep your body weight like that and the condition that you're in to make it user and lifestyle friendly enough?
Yeah, I've settled in, like you said, I've settled into a weight that is my weight and I don't starve myself ever. If anything, I probably, you know, I could eat less sometimes and still maintain the look that I have because my body is so used to being at where I'm at.
Yeah.
Now I will fine tune myself a little bit with the food. So I turned 57 on October 3rd. So my goal is 6 weeks out, I am going to start a very focused nutritional and training program to take my body to the next level for my 57th birthday. Mm-hmm. That's what I do every birthday is I try and get better.
Yeah.
So I'll dial it in. So what I will do is maybe cut back on the carbohydrates a little bit, increase the cardiovascular a little bit, you know, the typical bodybuilding type of regimen,
yeah,
I'll still utilize,
yeah,
you know, because it works. It works when you know why you're doing it. That's right. The key. It's not right for everybody, but it's right for those of us that know what we're doing and why we're doing it and specifically how to do it.
Yeah. And I think the why is really important. I think it's not only is it important, you know, for what you do, but even as a personal trainer, I always tell my, because I still have a studio and I have people that run that. And I tell them, look, that what's going to make you different than everybody else out there is know why you're doing something. Don't just tell people to do something, but explain to them why coherently and in an easy way that they can understand, you know? And I think that you figured that part of it out. Are you a big believer in how much protein do you take in, for example? Is there a certain protein intake that you keep at it pretty much?
So I'm very instinctive in the way I do everything. training, nutrition, and all of that. I do not buy into the bodybuilder mentality of 1 gram per pound of body weight. I think that that is marketing. I think that's dangerous for most people. I just don't believe it. So I also don't subscribe to the physician's recommendation of a half a gram per pound of lean body weight. I go somewhere in between there. So I say like 0.8 to 1 gram per pound of lean. So if I'm 185, that means I'm probably 150 lean. Yeah. So if I'm at 0.8 at 150 pounds of lean, so I'm getting about 130, 135 grams a day. So if I'm eating five times a day, that's, you know, 30 grams of protein per meal, which if we look at the science, that's what most people will agree that the human body can assimilate.
Yeah.
Not 100. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Are you pretty regimented as far as when you eat, you know, five times a day? Are you like on the dot eating like that?
Nope.
No? You just eat. Not at all. Again, you're pretty instinctive about when. Do you eat late, later on in the evening? Because, you know, people ask, well, you shouldn't eat after 6 o'clock. I never believed in that idea, by the way, and I never did it, and I still don't. But do you stop eating at a certain time?
When I'm sleeping.
Okay, so you otherwise you're fueling your body.
I'm eating, you know, and that it just, so people need to understand what category they fit in when it comes to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, for a bodybuilder, we need to eat because we're not at the same activity level as a, we'll call it a regular person with a 9-to-5 that's not a fitness professional.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that to say anyone's any better or any worse, but what I'm saying is our goal and our focus is different than someone who might want to lose weight. So now someone who might want to lose weight might need to stop eating at 5 or 6 o'clock or 3 hours before they go to bed.
Yeah.
That makes sense then. But for us, no, I just eat, man.
Yeah. And the thing about it, when you're around it and you're a student of the game, which you are, I am, you pay attention to that. It's hard to trust your instinct unless you've been around long enough and go through those mistakes, and your body is as your laboratory. So you learn about that. And then after a while, it's just like, even now with my training, I mean, I'm just like Platt used to say, I'm just an old guy having fun in the gym, but it's still probably more intense than most of the people that are just going to the gym. It's just not like it was back in those crazy days, you know, but there's times when I go into the gym, I'll do just something totally different than what I thought I was going to do just because my body's telling me that. And it's kind of weird to say that when you're not used to trusting your instinct. But I think that's what you get down to in many ways. It's just like, I know there's certain times I know I have to eat up because my body is hungry in a way that's not usual. And that, I'm sure you can relate to that. It's not just simply being hungry. It's like, I need to eat more, like 1,000 calories or 50, you know, more, because today there's something else going on inside.
Either inside or outside. You know, you're getting ready to go on a big hike or lift deadlift or go train with Michael Hearn, you know, and his wife. So, you know, you eat for the activity. And that's something that I've done a lot too. Like, you know, if you eat for the next 3 hours, then I think that's a good way for a lot of people to approach this, right? What are you going to be doing for the next 3 hours? I'll be laying on my ass watching TV. Okay. Right. Well, then eat for that. Don't stuff your face. Don't have a pizza. Don't.
Right.
That's where people get into trouble.
That's good advice. It's simple, but it's really good advice. You know? Yeah. Okay. So Issa, master trainer. Issa is where Platts used to do all of his seminars, correct?
Correct.
Did you ever encounter or cross paths with Tom?
No, not there in the gym back at Gold's Gym in Venice. He used to be there back in the 90s when I would go in and do photo shoots and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did you ever get to know him?
No.
I have to tell you something, a story about Tom. Tom is a crazy, he's a wild man. And I was lucky enough to train with him because one of my books, he came on and we did this thing together and traveled and all that. So I got to know him on that level. Clark, I've never been afraid to go in and work out in a gym, but with Tom Platts, I was afraid because that sucker, something in his eyes, it never failed. I sort of recognized that would flip. His eyes changed. And then I realized, uh-oh, this is not going to be good because he gets out there. I mean, he did, you know, you probably heard a lot of the stories, but Tom, out of curiosity one time, he wanted to see how many reps that he could squat with 135 before he passed out. I mean, that's his mentality back then, you know? And oh my goodness, but he taught me a lot as far as trusting your instincts. But okay, so when you become a master trainer, with ISSA. What does that mean exactly?
It's just you took a test to, and passed it and, you know, got a qualification.
Okay. Is it something, how do they do their testing now? Is there any hands-on stuff or is it all you study, pass it, and you get the badge of honor?
So like a lot of these certifications, they have options A or B. You could do it online, which is how I did mine. I just did it online because I knew through life experience that I had the hands-on experience. You know, I had a TV show. I owned gyms. I had been training people forever. So they, I guess, just assume that, okay, Clark's got the hands-on qualification that we need to justify. Just, Clark, just do this course. Yeah. Please just answer some questions. And so it was not necessarily an honorary one. I took the test. I passed it. But it wasn't both hands-on and written like I think it should be done. And I'm sure you'll agree because to get a three-day seminar over the internet.
It makes a lot of people a dangerous trainer.
Yeah, man. That's
a whole podcast. I agree. Totally. Don't get me going. So tell me about you've been in the movies and tell us about you. I see you've been a superhero. Talk to us a little bit about your film career and how that all got started. Did you take the same approach and go to a director one day and say, hey, I'm that guy that you want for a superhero. How did that work out for you?
So I actually did the complete opposite. I said, no, I'm not doing this. Why did you even call me? The backstory on Batman Dead End is the director, Sandy Calora, was a huge Batman fan, and he wanted to do a fan film, his idea of what Batman should be, gritty, real life. So his number one goal was to find a bodybuilder who was athletic that didn't need to have a rubber suit on, that had the actual muscle, but also had the athleticism. So what I come to find out later was he auditioned dozens and dozens of bodybuilders, many of which weren't athletic at all. So he one day was at a Starbucks, almost giving up on finding one. Sylvester Stallone actually said yes. He was going to do the part. He was between Rocky V and Rambo, and he was doing nothing at the time. So he actually agreed to play this part. And then he backed out because his agents got to him. So anyway, the director's at a Starbucks and he sees a business card of a bodybuilding photographer by the name of Jason Ellis. So he thought, I'm going to give this guy a call. So he calls him up and he says, hey, I'm looking for a guy, square jaw, you know, dark hair, light eyes, deep voice, athletic, buff. And my buddy was just getting ready to say, that's my buddy Clark Bartram. Then he said 6 feet tall. And he's like, damn, my buddy Clark fits that description, but he's not 6 feet. So Jason Ellis calls me, said, hey, there's a guy that wants to look at you to play Batman. So he described the character. And I said, Jason, no, I'm not 6 feet. I'm not going to these. I would go to auditions and there would be all these monsters in there, like Gunther would show up to these auditions. I'm like, why am I here? I'm not 6'3", man. And my agent would send me on these things and I was getting pissed. So I said, no, I'm not doing this. The director called me. He's like, dude, your voice is perfect. I need you for this. Just please come and see me. So I went up and saw him and the rest is history. I did this thing and it turned out to blow up. It was the first viral video on YouTube. It tore Comic-Con apart. I still to this day get people messaging me and sending me autograph pictures. I just got a flood of autograph pictures from Germany for Batman for no apparent reason. People say it's because of the COVID. People are now asking for autographs more, but it's.
Do you have
a
photo of that? A photo?
Yeah. Go online and just Google on YouTube, look up Batman Dead End, and then watch Batman Dead End, the making of. That's the really interesting one.
Okay.
That was the first time at Comic-Con that there was a huge line and buildup, right?
Yep.
With the Joker and the Predators and all that?
Yep.
Oh my, that. Real quick, sorry.
Leo. No, you just woke up Charles.
I help Leo with the audio. That's a big reason why I got into filmmaking. That was an amazing short film. That was amazing.
Son of a gun.
See, this happens all the time, man. And back to what Charles said, that line. So I was in this little room. We were kind of premiered in this small little room. It was a screening room. And prior to us, there were these other movies that were fan films that people were making. And there were 4, 5, 7, maybe 10 people in the room. And we're like, damn. So we're sitting in there and ours is next. We're sitting in this room with maybe 12 people. We're like, okay, this was a bust. And my buddy, the director, came out and he does this to me. And the look on his eyes was crazy. Tom Platz looking. He's like, oh my God, come here. No lie. And Charles will tell you, I walked out of this room. The line went as far as you could possibly see around the corner. They had to call the fire marshals because there were so many people trying to pack into this room, especially after the first screening of it. We showed it three times, and then we showed it in the masquerade room. 5,000 people went absolutely berserk.
Holy crap.
Standing on the chairs, screaming.
The best Batman film still to this day.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'll have to show you. It's really good.
That is amazing. Golly, what? That's cool, man.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Okay, so I also see here that you have a guide, how to, you too can become a fitness model. So it sounds to me like you're doing kind of like what I was telling you about with From Homeless to Handsome, developing a strategy, how to train men how to dress. Is this teaching people, obviously, how to become a fitness model? And what goes into that?
Yeah, so that was something a buddy of mine encouraged me to do way back before there were really fitness models. And I was kind of like the first working guy consistently. He said, why don't you write a book? And I'm like, who's going to read this? Because fitness models didn't exist.
Yeah.
So I was on an airplane one day and I just started typing away. And the guy next to me said, dude, what are you writing? And I'm like, I'm writing a book. He's like, on what? I'm like, how to be a fitness model, you know? Yeah. And that ended up getting published. That was another one of those bold moves where I just opened up a book and called the publisher and said, hey, I've got a book. And the guy, like Charles, he knew who I was, thought I was, you know, he's like, Clark is like a legitimate fitness model. We need to publish this thing. So I ended up getting an advance royalty for that book. And it ended up being translated into Italian. And I got a couple cases sitting out in my shed. You know, it's an old book. It's outdated because it doesn't include social media or anything.
Right, like right. Exactly. Well, how fascinating. You've had a really great life, man. Seriously. And then you've moved on now, or you part of what you do is being involved with prison fellowship. What does that all entail?
So that's no longer around. Prison fellowship was something that was started by Chuck Colson after his involvement in the Watergate scandal. And he went to prison and, you know, because he was a celebrity, he got a lot of attention. And the story is when he was leaving, a lot of the other inmates looked at him and said, hey, Colson, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to help us out? You know what goes on in here now. You have the power. And he looked back and he said, I'll be back. And he created Prison Fellowship. And I worked for a part of that division. It was called Operation Starting Line. And we would go into prisons and do kind of like a variety show. I would do feats of strength, bend horseshoes, rip phone books, break baseball bats, blow up hot water bottles, old Franco Colombo stuff.
Yeah.
And there would be a comedian, maybe a former athlete, a former inmate. And we would just preach the gospel to them and, you know, in hopes that they would give their life over to the Lord. And then we would move on and the prison ministry that was permanent there would take over. And I traveled all around the country doing that. And I've been in death row. I've been in level 5 supermax prisons that are built underneath the ground. I've been in some ugly, crazy places, Rikers Island. I've lifted weights with some mean people in prisons.
Yeah.
and you know, at the end of the day, it's just they're people.
Yeah.
And they need to feel loved and appreciated and heard and respected. Some of them, you never want them to get out. But a lot of them are guys that one guy I remember was acting all crazy. And he was a regular guy like me and you. His neighbor and him had beef. Neighbor came over talking shit, punched him in the face, fell down, hit his head on a rock, died, manslaughtered. Lawyer didn't do a good job, ended up in there longer than he should be, and said, you know what? F it. I'm just going to go crazy up in this bitch. And that's it. That was it, you know? And I thought to myself, wow, that could be me, right? How many times have you wanted to sock someone in the face?
Right. No, true.
This guy had no intention of that guy dying.
Right, that's right.
So there are a lot of people in prison like that. And we put this tag on prison people in prisons that are locked up, and we forget about them, man.
Yeah.
My eyes were opened.
Would you say that generally you were received really well when you went talk to the prisons like that, the prisoners?
Me, no. Until I started to talk. And that's where I really honed my public speaking skills and my honesty and my directness and my, you know what, F you kind of attitude.
Yeah.
Because if you're not bold in prison, you'll get shut down. If you're not honest in prison, you'll get found out. And when I come in, because I was the buff guy, right, that is what makes prison unique. You got a lot of alpha males in there. So they would bill me as this guy that's going to do all these feats of strength. So I had to learn how to circumnavigate the attitude. So at the time I was on ESPN, I was on Kiana's Flex Appeal. So when I would get up to speak, I would say, I know a lot of you guys remember me from a popular TV show I'm on called Kiana's Flex Appeal. Because that was the show. They watched Denise Austin body shape, or Denise Austin, they watched Body Shaping, and they watched Kiana. And then I would say something, well, I know you didn't recognize me because you were looking at Kiana. Well, at least I hope you were looking at Kiana. And I was like, ah, they would start hitting the, you know.
Yeah. And, just joking.
Yeah. And then right after that, the wall would come down. And then I would bring a guy up and teach him how to tear a phone book instead of showing them, like, look what I can do.
Yeah.
And that's something I figured out, was trying to empower them instead of impress them.
Right. That's a really good distinction right there, because that makes a whole difference, you know.
Yeah.
Totally. Okay, so and I see here that, and Ulysses says, more importantly than all of your business stuff, you and your wife are still together over 30 years, and it sounds like you've had a great support system. How does she fit into all this thing? Is she involved with you as far as, does she train with you like Michael Hearn's wife does, or is she that strong backbone and is right there for you the whole time?
She's the strong backbone that's right there for me the whole time.
Yeah, because it sounds like you're really busy and you're traveling sometimes, and you got to have, there's a certain type of person that you have to be with in order to be able to tolerate that, I would say.
Yeah, my wife is amazing. For her to put up with what she's put up with me for as long as she's put up with me for is truly a feat of strength in and of itself, because imagine I'm in Hawaii shooting a TV show with three other beautiful fitness model girls. Yeah. I am holding a girl in my arms, looking at her like I'm in love with her for a picture. I'm surrounded by four or five girls for an ad. And here my wife is at home raising two young kids. I'm in China with a fitness model. I'm all around the world surrounded by the most perfect bodies on the planet. Yeah. And my wife is home, only left to her thoughts. And if we circle back to what we originally talked about, how our thoughts can take us down a pathway of fear and anxiety and all of that worry and stuff, man, my wife is a straight up badass. I mean, she really is. Yeah. And the truth is, and this needs to be said, she is more beautiful than any one of these women that I've ever modeled with. My wife is hot as F. She is so good. Google her. Look her up, man. I'm telling you. She, at 54 years old, she just left with her friend. They got all dressed. She goes, I'm going to look cute today. I'm like, go for it.
Yeah.
You know? And she came out with her buddy. I'm like, oh, you guys are going to slay.
Yeah.
I want my wife to feel beautiful. I want her to go out and have guys look at her. I want her to feel like she's the hottest girl in town. I'm not that guy that says, no, I want her. She deserves that, man.
Yeah. That's cool, man. That's really good. You lived a full life. Before we exit here on this show, would you like to, I mean, my goodness, what can you promote? You know, if you'd like to promote something on our show, we'd love for you to do that.
Yeah, you know, so I'd be remiss, Leo, if I didn't talk about what I'm currently doing right now.
Yeah.
All of what we just talked about has led me to be exactly where I'm at today. And I feel like I'm in the most sweet spot that I've ever been in at 56 years old. I am launching a product called NanoTest. It's the first ever natural testosterone boosting product of its kind. I've spent a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, a lot of research, a lot of resources to make what I feel is the best product, because I've been used and abused and profited on by many companies over my career. I finally got smart enough to say, forget those guys. I'm doing it myself. I want to make the best product ever. I'm leveraging technology. And what I'm doing right now is I've just created a group of team members who are in a private Facebook community. And there are so many guys out there who are not being served by a passionate, on fire coach like myself. So that's what I'm doing. I'm launching this, and the goal is around October 3rd on my birthday that the product will be ready. We've ordered all the all of the ingredients. There are over 35 ingredients in this product. 35. It is packed. It's expensive to make, so it's not going to be cheap. Yeah. But if people want a cheap product, they can go get it all day long. That's I'm not true. That guy. Yeah. I think you figured out by now, when I do something, I'm doing it all in, man. Yeah. So I'm telling you, when I launch this thing, it's going to be like nothing else, because it's a complete system. The NanoTest Performance System for Men. World, men, look out, because it's on the way.
Hey, I want to ask you, maybe you can't tell me this because it's not out yet. What makes your product unique?
First of all, the amount of ingredients that I put in there. I didn't fairy dust anything. There's something in this industry called fairy dust, where yeah. a company will go into a facility and make a product and put in the proprietary blend. I've seen this with my own two eyes, literally more than once. A guy will take something like biotin, for example, which was a really expensive ingredient for your hair. And I mentioned that because you have great hair. So you take biotin and you sprinkle it over the, we'll call it a vat. You sprinkle it. That way you can put it in the proprietary blend without divulging how much of it is actually in there, whether it's efficacious or not. But here's the real differentiating factor with my product. I've nanotized all of the ingredients. So I've taken the molecular structure of each ingredient that may or may not pass the blood-brain barrier and made it so it will pass the blood-brain barrier by reducing the molecular size from, let's say, 2,000 nanometers to 800 nanometers. Now it can pass, so it's bioavailable. A lot of the products on the market today are not bioavailable to the human body, meaning we piss them or shit them out and we can't use them.
Right.
So this 100%, this morning, I got the pump of a lifetime. I am, you can see how I am. This is me normal, but this is me on NanoTest too.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, man, I wake up every day and I'm just going to keep it real. Since I've been taking this product, because I'm testing it on myself, or I'm using it myself before I give it to anyone else, I wake up every day with a raging boner at 56.
That's cool.
Man, that's what every man wants. Exactly. That is what if we're going to do this thing, let's end it on a real note. Yeah. That's what every freaking guy wants. They want to wake up and go, damn.
That's exactly right.
You know?
No, I get you. And these young guys that don't know that, you're in for a rude awakening, you youngster. If you lose a relationship with your dick at an older age, it kills you. No
well, some
good.
Guys are having that happen to 30 now, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about a pandemic. That's a pandemic than this bullshit we got going on.
Penis pandemic is good. It's a lot worse. I agree. Yeah. No question about it. Listen, man, it's been awesome talking to you. You're a great guest. And, you know, one of these days, if you'd like to come back on, if you know, when your product comes back out, I'd love to have you back on again. You're a wealth of knowledge. You got a great aura about you. And just like you said, you know what? We're attracted to people like that. I'm very attracted to your energy. It's very enthusiastic, and I do appreciate that. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you, my brother. Glad to be here, and I will come back for sure, 100%.
All right, man. Well, you have a good day, okay? Be safe.
All right, brother, you too.
All right, take care.
Let's go.
There you go, baby.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.